Play and SoundCloud. And please do share today's program with friends, family, and colleagues on Twitter and Facebook. We've also made it easy.
Hello, this is Liliana.
I'm Danaya.
And I'm Badila.
And we're from Perfect 10 After School,
a wonderful club for girls in Hudson, New York.
And you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA.
Community radio for Columbia and Greene counties.
Perfect 10 girls got it going on.
Oh, yeah.
Follow WGXC on Facebook or Twitter. There will be constant updates of on-air interviews, community news, weather warnings, and more at twitter.com/WGXC. And those WGXC Twitter messages also go to facebook.com/WGXC radio. Tune in to WGXC on 90.7 and at the web at WGXC.org.
Common Ground is a private, not-for-profit organization offering dispute resolution services to the people in Columbia and Greene counties. Common Ground provides trained mediators who work to resolve the differences between two or more participants on issues including family, housing, business, workplace, school, and neighborhood disputes. The mediation process is informal, private, confidential, and voluntary. For more information, please contact Common Ground at 518-943-0523 or on our website www.commongroundinc.org.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Wednesday, February the 13th, 2019. I'm Mike Clifford. In a rare display of bipartisanship, the U.S. Senate passes a public lands protection bill. Also, on our Wednesday rundown, we take you to a state in the midst of a debate over gun background checks. Plus, dam spills proposed to save starving orcas in the Northwest. Topping our news, the U.S. Senate Tuesday passed a sweeping public lands conservation bill. The New York Times reports the measure would designate more than 1 million acres of wilderness for environmental protection and permanently reauthorize a federal program to pay for conservation measures. The Senate vote wasn't even close. The Times reports it was 92-8 in favor of the bill, offering a rare victory for environmentalists at a time when the Trump administration is working aggressively to strip away protections on public lands and open them to mining and drilling. Western lawmakers of both parties have been working for 4 years on the bill, which will be taken up next by the House, where it also enjoys bipartisan support.
Dozens of Nevadans on all sides of the gun debate testified in a day-long hearing Tuesday before a joint session of the state legislature on a proposal that would tighten up background checks on gun sales.
The new law would include background checks for private sales and those online and at gun shows. Andrew Woods with the group Save Lives Nevada says Senate Bill 143 would do all that and close loopholes in the federal background check laws. He says it follows the lead of 19 other states plus the District of Columbia.
In those states that have background checks, they have statistically significant decrease in the amount of women getting shot by an intimate partner, law enforcement getting killed by handguns, as well as gun trafficking.
Voters approved background checks in the form of the ballot measure in 2016, but at the time, Governor Brian Sandoval and Attorney General Adam Laxalt blocked it, saying it was unenforceable. Opponents of Senate Bill 143 say it makes life difficult for law-abiding gun owners and won't deter black market sales of guns to criminals. No word yet on when the bill will receive a vote. Current Governor Steve Sisolak and Attorney General Aaron Ford are on record in support. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Last October, Las Vegas witnessed the deadliest mass shooting in the nation's history. And a bipartisan group of Minnesota lawmakers introduces a measure today that would bring schools and local farmers closer together. Alongside school nutrition coordinators, producers, and healthy food advocates, the bill's sponsors are launching a campaign to support farm-to-school programs. State Representative Todd Lippert says the bill would create a $2 million grant program to reimburse schools that integrate locally grown food and put staff in place at the Department of Agriculture to facilitate relationships between farmers and schools.
We have tax dollars that we are setting aside for feeding our children at school, and this farm-to-school program will help those tax dollars go directly to local farmers. So it's kind of like we're injecting those funds back into the local community.
There are nearly 270 school districts nationwide that have farm-to-school programs, but Minnesota is one of only 12 states without a statewide policy. Senator Mike Grogan, a Republican from Red Wing, is also sponsoring the bill. Most older Americans want to age in place, staying in their own homes rather than move to an assisted living facility or nursing home, but according to an AARP report, New Hampshire is doing very little to help them.
The report ranks the state 50th in helping older people age in place. Specifically, New Hampshire spends a lower percentage of Medicaid dollars on home-based care than other states. Doug McNutt with AARP New Hampshire thinks part of the problem is that home care services don't have the same clout here as nursing facilities.
The home care industry traditionally hasn't been as strong politically as the nursing homes in the counties have, because counties also run their own nursing homes, so that plays into the voice of the nursing home industry as well.
However, according to a MetLife market survey, nursing homes are about three times as expensive for families as home-based care. McNutt says Governor Sununu understands this and put a little bit of money in last year's budget to try to increase the rates paid to home care providers. Sununu delivers his budget address tomorrow. I'm Laura Ross-Brautelum reporting.
According to that AARP report, the U.S. population age 65 and older is expected to double by the year 2050, and the population over age 85 is expected to triple in the same time period. Both are trends that will have a profound effect on state budgets and on families' ability to provide and pay for care. Finally, Eric Tegenhoff reports Washington State is now proposing to increase the volume of water spilled over Columbia and Snake River dams, that to aid salmon recovery, a plan designed to feed the region's dwindling orca population.
The State Department of Ecology holds a public meeting today in Vancouver on the proposal. The agency is responsible for total dissolved gas levels in the rivers, and it's a delicate balance. More spill helps migrating fish navigate the dams, but too much increases gas levels and could hurt some fish. Rob Grable with the group Defenders of Wildlife says the plan is a recommendation of the state's Southern Resident Orca Task Force.
Given the task force coming together, the awful images that we saw this summer of orcas dying in the Sound right before our eyes, it really motivated action. And this is one of the most effective things that the state can do in the near term to provide immediate relief to Southern Resident Orcas.
The public can comment on the Ecology Department proposal through February the 28th. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for newsin' and cruisin' with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Wednesday there's a chance of snow showers in the morning, just a 30% chance. Then it should be just mostly cloudy with a high near 34, low around 22. Again, a 30% chance of snow showers Wednesday night. Thursday should be partly sunny with a high near 37, low around 26, with a chance of sleet Thursday night. There could be more sleet Friday morning, then turning rainy with a high near 42, low around 24 Friday night. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2154, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, February 13th, 2019. In Cuba, although Havana and the surrounding area were certainly unprepared for the scope of devastation from its recent historic tornado, amateur radio operators were prepared and did their best.
A rare tornado swept through Cuba in its capital city of Havana on the 27th of January. As the death toll climbed, local amateurs were already preparing to respond to what was the strongest tornado to hit the island since 1940. The storm had knocked out landlines and left cell phone networks seriously compromised. Using 2-meter repeaters in the capital, hams relayed information about the storm's path and helped coordinate municipal response on the ground. The team included such radio operators as Carlos, CO2JC, who is coordinator of the National Emergency Net, Daniel, CO2DFC, Osvaldo, CO2LD, and Vladimir, CO2VC, who were identified in a report from FRC, Cuba's National Amateur Radio Society. The latest reports indicate that by the time the storm had ended, 4 were killed and nearly 200 were left injured. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kevin Trotman, N5PRE.
Two ham radio operators were among those to receive the Order of Australia Medal on January 26th, Australia Day.
Raphael Chamie, VK2RF, a member of the Waverley Amateur Radio Society, and Phil Byrne, VK2MCB of the Rotarians of Amateur Radio for Australia, New Zealand and Oceania, were honoured for their contributions. Raffy is a member of the Wireless Institute of Australia Civil Emergency Network and a volunteer with the Scouts Jamboree on the Air. He is a member of the Hellenic Amateur Radio Association of Australia, or HAROA. He is a veteran de-expeditioner who has operated from such HAROA de-expeditions as Lord Howe Island, Montagu Island and Norfolk Island, where he was a member of the HAROA team. Phil is a regional vice president of the Rotarians Group. The retired Air Commodore is a coordinator of the Food Bank program in New South Wales and ACT and chaired the Rotary Adventure in Citizenship program in 2017, amongst many of his other activities. The medal was created in 1975 by Elizabeth II to recognise Australian citizens and other persons for achievement of meritorious service. Congratulations to the deserving recipients. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Robert Broomhead, VK3DN.
Finally this week, we take a look at the Oscars. No, we're not going to Hollywood on you. For these Oscars, you look to the sky.
The number 100 is not to be taken lightly. In years, it marks a century. In percentages, it signifies totality. And in the language of modern-day text messaging, 100 means keeping it real. It is in that spirit that AMSAT celebrated the designation of the 100th Oscar satellite, ASAIL-2 P4A. The amateur radio satellite was launched last November from Cape Canaveral in Florida and is the first geostationary amateur radio payload. It was developed with AMSAT-DL as technical lead and was a joint effort by the Qatar Amateur Radio Society and the Qatar satellite company, ASAILSAT. On the 23rd of December, its narrow and wideband transponders were tested successfully and are expected to open for general use this month. Qatar Oscar 100 is now in its final position at 25.9 degrees east. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for 4 decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Kevin Trotman, N5PRE, Robert Broomhead, VK3DN, Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wellbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to Stars and Stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeples. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio, WGXC.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We start off with Senator James Sanders discussing his proposal for a Green New Deal for New York.
A group that is not known to be alarmist, NASA, has said that we are no longer about to do climate change, we are in climate change. They have recorded that since records have been kept. 18 of the 19 hottest years worldwide have occurred since 2001. Last year was the fourth hottest year on record. The consensus is in. The science is there. All but the most foolish would say that climate change doesn't exist. Everyone in their own lives can see that life is different. There's something happening when just the moment that they were born and just the life that they're living. So we're seeing that if we don't stop this, we're going to see more intense heat waves, prolonged droughts, spread of infectious diseases, rising sea levels, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I take this personal because I live by the coast. I represent a coastal community. We got hit by Hurricane Sandy, and we have not recovered. If you live in the Rockaways, as I do, I don't need to tell you about the chronic flooding condition that we have. I represent the Lower Ninth Ward of New York City, of New York State, the Lower Ninth Ward. That is an allusion to what happened in New Orleans during the Katrina disaster. And New Orleans never recovered, and I represent the Lower Ninth Ward of New York City. Whatever's gonna happen is gonna happen to us first. We don't raise our voices, if we don't lead on these issues, they're going to write about us. The Hurricane Katrina superstorm, which destroyed much of New Orleans and the surrounding area. After Sandy, we had Hurricane Maria that hit Puerto Rico. My friends, we're seeing something happening, and when are we, the everyday person, going to step up and say, you know, enough is enough. Leadership must come from the ground. National Climate Assessment, which was released in 2018, a close to 2,000-page report, which was published by the United States Global Change Research Program, big name, for a giant problem. That organization has 13 different federal agencies in it, and they directly contradict President Trump's position that we don't know if the increase of global temperature is due to human activity. Lined in this report is that we don't have all day. There's only a short window that we have that humans can make a difference here. After that, the law of unanticipated consequences.
We hear from Senator Ramos, chair of the Senate Labor Committee.
Good morning, everybody. Science is real. Climate change is real. There's no sense in debating that. What we should be debating is how we're going to go about addressing the imperative of solving reducing carbon emissions, of making sure that we are doing away with all of the pollution in our oceans and so many other things that we as human beings have been contributing to. In my district, just some weeks ago, we experienced a transformer fire at a Con Edison plant. The Con Edison plant that has been producing dirty energy in my community for decades, resulting in very high asthma rates for our children, for our pets, for our elders, for every single member of our community. And so this really is a moral imperative to pass a Green New Deal in New York State.
Next is Senator Rachel May from Syracuse.
And I want to talk about two other vulnerable groups. I represent Central New York, and we have a lot of farmers in my district, and farmers are trying to put food on the table, but they are, climate change is a huge threat to them, as the we have huge swings in temperatures and droughts and flooding and new invasive species coming up to Central New York. It is really hard for them to keep putting food on the table, and so our whole agricultural sector needs this Green New Deal as well. But the other group that many of us have hinted about, but I think we really need to focus on, is our children. I have worked for 15 years in environmental education, working with college students and K through 12 students on issues of sustainability and climate change. And our children live with a degree of anxiety that we cannot imagine. They are afraid of what their future is going to bring.
Reverend Peter Cook, who's the executive director of the New York State Council of Churches.
On behalf of the council and the 7,000 congregations we represent today, we are just thrilled to be here today to support Senator Saunders as he introduces this legislation for a task force to assemble a plan for a Green New Deal. You know, as I travel all over this state, I get to talk to farmers, I get to talk to people in poor communities which have been disproportionately affected by environmental degradation. We just see so many problems, and yet sometimes we have a failure of imagination to address those problems. We get into our own silos, and we don't keep our eye on the moral imperative to take care of the earth. So this Green New Deal is inclusive and comprehensive in its vision. That's why New York State needs to form an inclusive task force like the one proposed by Senator Saunders, which has the proper authority to receive and process expert testimony from all sectors. All sector task force, because of its inclusive nature, would be able to consider and enhance proposals which are already before the state.
Alex Beecham spoke on behalf of Food and Water Watch.
You know, we're excited as Food and Water Watch to come here and support this legislation because it truly addresses the massive scale of the crisis we find ourselves in. We don't have to debate the science. We're living through climate crisis every day, and we need real solutions that address the enormity of that problem. So here's what that means. We need a fair, swift, and just transition completely off fossil fuels by 2030, and we need to stop the construction of new fossil fuel plants all across the state. You know, we don't have years and years to push this off anymore. We can't wait till the middle of this century to solve the problem. We need strong action, and we need it immediately.
Dr. Margaret Klein Salomon.
But I realized that there is an asteroid heading towards this planet that's going to kill us all, and that basically the whole country is crazy, and we're talking about whether it's real, whether fixing it would be too expensive, or whether we can take decades to deal with this asteroid. But the answer is pretty obvious, actually. We are in danger, and we need to do everything that we can to solve this crisis. We do not have decades to reduce emissions.
Our last speaker is Howie Hawkins, former Green Party gubernatorial candidate.
For the Green Party, I campaigned three times for governor on a Green New Deal for New York. And this bill embodies key points that we were talking about. The first thing is it's science grounded and sets the right deadline for a decarbonized clean energy economy of 2030. a lot of people, the United States government, countries around the world, most of them out of the Copenhagen Climate Conference in 2009. The bill, the Climate and Community Protection Act, the Assembly's passed three times. They're going for 100% or 80% by 2050. And that's based on a goal that's really was designed by politics, not science. The way we got to 2 degrees Celsius as the so-called danger point was that originally scientists said, well, what if we double the carbon over pre-industrial levels to 550? The climate model said that'll get you to 2 degrees. And by the time they got to 2009, they said the model said, no, it'll be 450. But actually that year, actually 2 years before that, James Hansen at the Goddard Space Institute and his colleagues and other climate scientists around the world were saying, no, if you get to 450 parts per million in 2 degrees, climate inertia and feedback loops are going to take you to 3 or 4 degrees anyway. And that is climate disaster. That's dangerous. That's not just heat waves and stronger storms. It's undermining agriculture, the destruction of ecosystems, general impoverishment, mass migration, social conflict and war over dwindling resources. That's what dangerous climate change means. So the climate clock is running down. And what the scientists like James Hansen said is industrial states like New York have to get to this 100% goal by 2030 if we're going to have a hope of staying within the climate that we call the Holocene, where agriculture was able to be done and was the material foundation for human civilization. So that's the stakes, and this bill meets the deadline, and that's really important. We got to deal with the reality, and that's what the science tells us.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at wgxc.org, including some of these events.
And coming up on Thursday the 14th, a Valentine's Day swing dance with the Lucky Five performing at Dewey Hall in Sheffield, Massachusetts. Doors at 7:30, swing dance lesson at 8, and live music at 9 p.m. And then on Saturday, February 16th, a mental health awareness and creative arts gallery premiere exhibition will showcase art and other creative work by people in recovery from mental health and/or substance abuse problems at Solaris Camp Hill Hudson on Warren Street from 4 to 6 p.m. For the past 40 years, Beau Soleil has been making some of the most potent and popular Cajun music on the planet. Catch them at Club Helsinki Hudson on Columbia Street, starting at 9 p.m. That's it for this week's WGXC Community Calendar. You can add your own event and hear it right here on the radio by visiting WGXC.org and clicking on the calendar link at the top of the page.
If you can't make your local town meetings but want to attend, WGXC can help. Currently, local volunteers make recordings and live web streams of the Catskill Town Meetings, the Hudson Common Council Meetings, and the Columbia County Board of Supervisor Meetings. If you miss the live web streams, volunteers post recordings of these meetings as soon as possible at WGXC.org on the newsroom page and in the audio archives. If you're going to local meetings and you have a phone in your pocket, you can help too. Email info@wgxc.org and WGXC will help you share recordings of local meetings and events. You can also use the free WGXC app, available in the App Store, to do your own live webcast from local events. Contact info@wgxc.org for more information about how you can help share valuable local information about your community with your friends and neighbors. Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
Hello, this is Cleo, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM Accra.
Tune in to Radio for Open Ears Wednesday, February 13th. Maria Manhattan is in with the Hudson Cafe at 11 a.m. And after the noon news, Spike Priggen has the Bedazzled Radio Hour for 2 hours at noon. At 3 p.m., the Radio Survivor Show looks at the status of net neutrality now that it's back in the courts. At 6 p.m., Amy Goodman has the international news on Democracy Now! On WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The village of Catskill was hit with two more water main breaks early February 11th. The first break occurred around 3 a.m. on Abel Drive near Community Life Church. Village crews had the break repaired by 5:30 a.m., but by mid-morning they were called back to repair a second break on West Bridge Street near the former Agway. Village President Vincent Seeley said the village does not expect to issue a boil water advisory. The village suffered two other water main breaks in January. To address the problem, officials have plans to rehabilitate the system. Department of Public Works Superintendent Michael McGrath said water main breaks are not unheard of this time of year. He said, and I quote, "It's pretty typical. This year we had deep frost and then it was warm and cold again. Especially with an older system, it's almost unavoidable," end quote. The village's water main system is 120 years old, McGrath said. Seeley said the village's 2019 capital proposal calls for the replacement of some of the oldest water lines. He said, and I quote, "We have 30-plus miles of line. If they're supposed to last 30 to 40 years, we should be replacing a mile every year. We're still playing catch-up from years past," end quote. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced February 11th, nominations and applications are now open for the Empire State Excellence in Teaching Award. The program recognizes teachers statewide who exemplify the highest standards of teaching, working to foster creativity, instill a love of learning, and inspire independent thinking and student initiative. Last year, a total of 58 winners were selected from all 10 regions of the state. Cuomo said in a written statement released by his office, and I quote, "This program helps recognize the best of the best. The teachers who go above and beyond for their students to provide them the resources they need to succeed in the classroom and beyond. End quote. Honorees receive a $5,000 stipend to support their professional development interest. They will also be invited to meet with university workforce and policy leaders to share their expertise and insights. Applications will be evaluated by a panel comprised of members of several New York professional education associations. The application deadline is March 8th. Read the full press release at governor.ny.gov/news. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting Deputy Ulster County Executive Mark Ryder has withdrawn his name from consideration for the Democratic Party nomination for county executive and thrown his support to Patrick Ryan. Ryder said he will continue to work with the county executive's office and join Ryan's team. Ryder said that Ryan, and I quote, is the best choice to continue the great work that has taken place over the last decade, end quote. He called Ryan, and I quote, a progressive who has put his money where his mouth is. The company he founded offered paid family leave that is necessary to do the job. He grew his company to over 150 employees, and he has the real management skills necessary to lead the workforce of over 1,350 employees that I know and work for. End quote. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. The Times Union is reporting a new Siena Research Institute poll found that 56% of New Yorkers approve of the recently announced deal between Amazon and the state of New York that would allow the online retailer to locate its corporate office in Queens. Only 36% oppose the deal, according to the data released February 12th. Siena College Research Institute Director Don Levy said in a statement, and I quote, even as Amazon is said to be re-examining the deal with New York to locate in Queens, by 20 points, New York voters approve of the deal, end quote. Governor Andrew Cuomo and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio have championed the agreement as a way to generate jobs. In other results, New Yorkers are evenly split on the question of legalizing sports betting, with 44% in support and 44% against. 85% of voters say it is important the state make an effort to count every New Yorker in the 2020 census. And a large majority of respondents support adding a question to the 2020 census asking if each person is a U.S. citizen. The poll was conducted by phone from February 4th through February 7th in English to 778 registered voters. Read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Gray. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Wednesday there's a chance of snow showers in the morning. Just a 30% chance. Then it should be just mostly cloudy with a high near 34, low around 22. Again, a 30% chance of snow showers Wednesday night. Thursday should be partly sunny with a high near 37, low around 26, with a chance of sleet Thursday night. There could be more sleet Friday morning, then turning rainy with a high near 42, low around 24 Friday night. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Bye.
That was Beacon-based saxophonist Joe McPhee with Damon Smith and Alvin Fielder, a song called Alternate Diagonals from the 2017 album Six Situations.
Do you have some news to share with WGXE listeners or a special community event you want everyone to know about? You can send press releases on any subject to news@WGXE.org, where they will be shared with all WGXE reporters, hosts, and programmers. Anyone can also add an event to the WGXE calendar online at WGXE.org/event. Just go to WGXE.org/events and click on the Add an Event button at the top of the page and type in the information about your event. WGXE announcers read these events on the air throughout the day, and internet readers can access them anytime. So please let WGXE listeners know when you're making news or when you have an event to share with your community.
I'm Tom Rowe with the WGXC local news. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Brett Samuels reports for The Hill that Governor Andrew Cuomo had a show meeting with President Donald Trump February 12th at the White House. Cuomo wanted to convince Trump to eliminate a provision in the Republicans' 2017 tax cut law that caps the state and local tax deduction at $10,000, raising taxes on many New Yorkers who now cannot write off their local taxes. A spokesperson for Trump claimed that the president listened to Cuomo's concerns about SALT and, quote, reiterated the negative impact that high taxes in states like New York have on hardworking families and job creators, unquote. Mostly, though, Trump changed the subject, telling Cuomo he needed to bring back fracking in New York, with companies injecting water and chemicals underground in order to fracture rocks and release natural gas. Trump claims fracking would invigorate the stagnant upstate New York economy. Representative Antonio Delgado, meanwhile, on February 12th, announced he is co-sponsoring the bipartisan Securing Access to Lower Taxes Act by ensuring deductibility taxes by ensuring deductibility Act of 2019 or SALT Deductibility Act. He tweeted February 12th, quote, glad to co-sponsor a bipartisan bill to eliminate SALT cap. The 2017 tax law irresponsibly added more than $1 trillion to deficit while creating the cap that results in double taxation for middle and working class families. Repealing it is the right thing to do, unquote. Read the full story at The Hill. Daily Freeman reports that protesters gathered at Representative Antonio Delgado's Kingston office February 8th to urge the freshman Democrat to sign on to the Green New Deal. Food and Water Watch, the New York Public Interest Research Group, and a few SUNY New Paltz students organized the protest. Quote, the Hudson Valley is the heart of environmental activism in our country, unquote, said Nick Leon, vice president of the local chapter of NYPIRG. Quote, if Delgado wants to truly represent his constituents, he will come out strong in the fight against climate change by supporting a Green New Deal and using his power to ban the expansion of all fossil fuel infrastructure in the Hudson Valley, including the Danskammer and Cricket Valley fracked gas plants, unquote. In Kingston, he is criticized for not signing on to the Green New Deal. And in a new series of online ads, Delgado is being picked on for backing the environmental plan, Roll Call reports, that the Congressional Leadership Fund, a group aligned with the House GOP leadership, is targeting Delgado, attempting to link him to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the so-called Green New Deal. The plan would create new jobs to eliminate carbon emissions in the United States. The ad falsely claims, quote, Antonio Delgado and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have begun their radical Green New Deal assault on the American economy, unquote. Then it uses video of Delgado from a forum last year with the New York League of Conservation Voters, where Delgado said, quote, why aren't we thinking of a Green New Deal, unquote, while suggesting bold ideas were needed to take on climate change. Last week, the National Republican Congressional Committee announced Delgado as one of the Democrats they will attempt to unseat in 2020. Sarah Trafton reports for Columbia Green Media that a New Hampshire-based waste processing company is, quote, scouting, unquote, the former Peckham Materials Cement Quarry in Smith's Landing in Catskill as a site to recycle metal from ash shipped in from its other plants. Wheelabrator, a company that converts waste into renewable energy, has, quote, expressed interest, unquote, in the 150 acres on Route 9W now owned by Peckham Materials Incorporated. The company introduced themselves to Catskill Village officials with a presentation to the Village Board of Trustees on January 23rd. Manager of Development Mark Schwartz said the company would not burn waste in Catskill. Quote, it's an industrial zone with no repurpose value, unquote, he said. Quote, there's no use for the land. There's no abutters. There's no disturbance of the view shed. We are doing subsurface studies of the site to test the hydrology, geology, seismic activity, resistivity and groundwater. We have found no fatal flaws so far, unquote, he said. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. The Mid-Hudson News reports that voters in Dutchess County may get some of their choices limited if legislators vote in term limits for the county legislature, county executive, and county comptroller. The county is updating its code of ethics, and term limits are favored by county executive Marcus Molinaro and others. Quote, we are moving on what I think are important reforms to show the public what we in this county hold ourselves to the highest standard, unquote. Molinaro said, quote, we are establishing a record of holding elected and public officials accountable, and we think that the establishment of term limits is a good way of ensuring new and fresh ideas and new and fresh elected officials, unquote. In 2018, the Ulster County legislature adopted 12-year term limits for legislators, comptroller, and their county executive. Read the full story in the Mid-Hudson News. You can find out more about all these stories in the newsroom at wgxc.org.
Give me liberty, or give me death!
WGXC, the station that gives you liberty.
You're listening to WGXC's At Issue. I'm your host, John Kane. Following is a conversation with the head of Hunter Democratic Party, Carolyn Riggs. Because of some technical difficulties with Skype, we are joining that interview in progress. You have recently taken on the task of heading up the Hunter Democrats. What area does that encompass?
So the Hunter Democratic Committee is comprised of the town of Hunter within the boundaries, the town boundaries. So that includes the village of Hunter, the town of Hunter, the village of Tannersville, and the hamlet of Haynes Falls, and I think about two or three of the local parks that are in the Hunter area.
That is, historically, I used to live in Tannersville. It's a fairly conservative area.
You know, for a historically resort community, I would say it's been a pretty even split in party affiliation between Republicans, Democrats, and unaffiliateds. We do see a concentration of Democratic voters in Hunter and in the village of Tannersville. But I would say overall, the town of Hunter is a pretty even split in political ideology.
Do you find that Hunter Democrats are a little bit more conservative just in general? I mean, I found in Tannersville and certainly, you know, in more rural areas in general that, you know, everyone subscribes to a message of self-sufficiency, whether that is real or imagined.
Yeah, I don't know if I would call it a more conservative Democrat. I would say that we're probably a little bit more moderate than your bigger municipalities, like down in New York City, for example. But we do have some, you know, progressive, we all share progressive values that could be argued are to the left of center.
What are the progressive values that you think are shared between the communities?
You know, I think it's equal rights and, you know, more so healthcare. I'd say universal healthcare. And there's definitely been a push for supporting Medicare for all or, you know, something like that, that everyone has equal access to affordable and accessible healthcare. But tied with that in rural communities, to making sure everyone has affordable healthcare is also access. And so that's making sure that, you know, our residents, you know, can dial 911 and get emergency services in a timely manner. They have access to hospitals and physicians, physician assistants and nurses in a timely manner. So I think it's more than just, you know, the national, supporting the national policy of Medicare for all, but it's the trend is definitely leaning more towards that type, supporting that type of system. And then also economic development. I think that, you know, we have our resort community here is, you know, starting to thrive again. And not only do we want to support our business owners, but we also want to make sure that we're supporting our employees. So that's making sure that affordable housing and workforce housing is available to our residents and to young people who move up here for seasonal work, and trying to figure out ways that we can get them to stay here year round.
Are second homeowners a big part of the Democratic makeup?
I would say second homeowners are a part of just the general residents makeup. I think there's second homeowners and weekenders in the town of Hunter that cross party lines. I know several Republicans who, you know, come up here for the weekends as well as Democrats. So I wouldn't say it's solely focused on one party over the other. Mm-hmm. But we do have them. We welcome them. And it's been great to get to know these folks and have them participate in our local politics.
Do second homeowners have priorities that are different from full-time residents that they brought up to you? I mean, there's you know, there are the broader concerns about universal health care and access, but are second homeowners, you know, more focused on making their homes a pleasant place for visitors, whereas full-time residents are really worried about jobs and, you know, economic security?
You know, I think the perception is that they wouldn't share, you know, some of the local issues, positions on the local issues, but I find that to be false. I think a lot of second homeowners share the same, you know, concerns about making sure that our businesses stay open and thrive, because they themselves are either, you know, partners in those businesses and or customers of those businesses. And in these small communities, you really build relationships with not just the business owners, but with the employees themselves. And so I think that in talking with some of our second homeowners, they have just as much of a vested interest in making sure that the shop owner and the store manager is, you know, able to make ends meet and to make sure that their kids are enjoying their public education and to make sure that the roads are well maintained and that the bridges are free and clear. So I wouldn't say that, you know, there's specific issues that would divide a full-time resident from a second homeowner, but there's more so issues that they find in common because that second homeowner would not, you know, reap the benefits without the full-time residents here.
So in 2018, Democrats obviously made a pretty strong showing nationwide. They took back the House. Upstate in particular, you know, the CD19 was flipped to a Democrat, Antonio Delgado. Are Democrats seeing that inertia carry over into 2019? Democrats generally are not local issue voters.
Yeah. So what we saw in 2018 was, you know, a big push and support for our Congressman Antonio Delgado, But what we didn't see was that transfer down the ticket to our state level Democrats. And that is definitely a concern for us at the local level as we're coming into 2019, when we have village elections on March 19th, and then we've got town elections and the primary and the general in June and November of this year. So, you know, as a member of the Hunter Democratic Committee, we're looking at engaging not just our Democratic voters, but all voters in making sure that they realize that these small local elections are just as important, if not more important, than the national races that we see on even number years.
I think that there's an opportunity for Democrats, certainly probably has been identified in some of these more conservative-leaning, you know, both assembly districts and at the county level to really make some headway in representation. What are some of the priorities of the Democrats in Greene County as they start to see their numbers increase, you know, and they can finally be a presence that's taken seriously?
Yeah, you know, we're the Democratic committees across Greene County have gotten together a couple times this year, and we're just beginning to kind of formulate, you know, a platform and what issues are important to our residents.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
Is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Agra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
I'm a rogue.